latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Vick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Vick.
We're back, hour two, 15 minutes in on this Wednesday, and we went out on that break with a real Brooklyn reference, and we go to Brooklyn, and Sid Fernando. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you had the radio on, but I sent everybody into nostalgia land. If you're from New York, if you're from the city or Long Island, Ebbinger's, that blackout chocolate cake of theirs.
Oh, nice!
Unbelievable! Yeah. With some Schraff's ice cream to go with it. Forget about
that's
it.
Forget about it. Yeah.
Jesus. Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and here we are. The sale today. We will wrap up book four. And this has just been, I don't want to say more of the same, but this has been, since we spoke last week, just unbelievable. And, of course, I left you, the next thing you knew, there was an $8 million horse. I mean, it's just been crazy.
Yeah, it's really something, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
The top of the market, that last day of book one, when we left off, was just obviously otherworldly from the $8.2 million, and everything else in between too. I mean, you know, that filly we had speculated had a chance to top the 4.1 leader at that point, and she did. But boy, did she do it! More than doubling what the colt made.
That's what was stunning, because I said to you, you know, could the Leslie's Lady could she eclipse the $4 million Curlin? And you said, well, yeah, maybe, but not.
Yeah.
Okay, $5 million. Okay, maybe $4.5 million.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But this was, you know, to have the confluence, to have the three of them. And it's so funny because when the number came out and, you know, the phone jingled and it says, you know, here's a whatever, a TDN alert. And, you know, 8.2 million for Beholder Sister. And I thought, this couldn't be Mandy Pope. Yeah. And 10 minutes later, you know, comes the confirmation. Mandy Pope.
Yeah. Now, I actually went into the ring to watch it, videotaped it for posterity, and so I was able to actually see her there bidding. So I knew that she was, once she got in on it, Godolphin was the underbidder. So, yeah, that was quite a, you know, that was quite a tough one.
The thing that's intriguing to me about this, the fact that, you know, this kind of money for the mayor, I mean, knowing, mm-hmm. you know, knowing that this, if this had been a brother of Mendelsohn and Into Mischief, as opposed mm-hmm. to a sister of Beholder, what is, you know, what would you have expected? I mean, wouldn't a colt have been worth more toward this kind of a number?
Yeah, you know, these days it seems like the colts are yearling colts. You know, we saw the one for 4.1 million. You know, maybe you say Mendelsohn was a $3 million colt. You know, with the partnerships and the way they are, you could definitely make a case that a colt could, you know, get to be, you know, in the $5 million range. We've seen it close already here, and this one was, you know, this one would have been particularly appealing as a colt. On the flip side, though, this is a trophy mare, and I thought she had a good chance to, you know, get past the colt, maybe up to $5 million is what I thought. It's stretching it as a trophy from a broodmare of the year, half to these three horses. Never did I think, you know, would get up to the level that she made, because usually that level, Steve, is reserved for the mare with the race record. So, you know, you get a mare with a race record, you're going to get, you know, that type of $9.5 million for Songbird, that type of range. But this mare got to that price level without the race record. So it's quite, you know, it's quite amazing that it took, as you pointed out, some serious bidding between three unaffiliated people to get that going to that level.
It'll be interesting, too, when we get to November. You know, the news came last week as well that Jeff Bloom electing at the end of the season to sell Midnight Bisou. And
yeah, exactly. And that's that kind of money, really.
Right. Mm-hmm. She'll command the kind of numbers, and she'll end up being one of those that the Japanese farms, they seem to covet those.
They do. They pay into the good millions for them. I can't think of them going that high. It seems like the highest prices in reach, unless I'm missing one, really have gone to people like Mandy Pope or Coolmore, or going in past years, Darley. It's certainly the Japanese, you know, anywhere from the high 700,000 to 2, 3, 4 million. It seems like they're in it, particularly when we talk about the Japanese, we're talking about Yoshida, either Kerry Yoshida of Shaddai or his arch rival Katsumi at Northern Farm.
Well, and of course they've bought Princess de Silmar and Champagne Doro and who else? That did.
Well, even the dam of the current horse Yoshida, appropriately named. That the dam of that horse, whose name escapes me at the moment, of course, was bought by them as well.
Yeah, this will be worth following. In the meantime, I want to hit a few of the storylines beyond the headline grabbers, books one and books two, that absolutely lived up to expectation. And then, of course, when you've got the kind of competition that we saw those first five sessions, it spills over into book three and four. And you know, the people that came and were hoping to, you know, get away with, I don't know, 250 to 500. Here, that must have been, was that on your end, Deja? That you lost Sid too? All right, we'll get Sid back. No, it wasn't. Well, that was weird then. All right, there was a little, there was a sun flare. anything that happens like that, we blame it on solar activity. Deja will get Sid back, and I want to talk about some sire stories because I was doing what I always do, digging through results and, you know, looking at, in particular, there's Sid now. Sid, got whacked. We came back. I was saying, I was in the process of asking you some storylines that you've been impressed with, you know, aside from the ones we know. I mean, Curlin and Medaglia d'Oro are leading the sale, Tappan and American Pharoah, et cetera. But in that next level, I found one that I can't wait to talk about, but I'll let you start. What are some of the successes that you're seeing?
Well, you and I had just spoken last week about Union Rags, mentioned that, you know, he was getting some high prices, and that kind of continued. Actually, the very next day after you and I spoke, the Union Rags topped the that session with $1 million colt. And I thought that, you know, that was an interesting horse. And you later pointed out to me, perhaps he's a quality road in the making. And bingo, that night on TDN, David and Gordo, who had been buying some of these Union Rags, mentioned the exact same thing you said. He read your mind. He said, I believe he's like another quality road.
Amazing.
So,
well, I'm in good company, boy. If David,
kudos to you. Yeah,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll go back and forth, point counterpoint. I'm going to throw out one that I don't think is going to be that obvious to people yet, and maybe post sale.
Mm-hmm.
There is a developing story on Upstart.
Yeah, I mean, am I surprised? No. And I'll explain why. Because it's something you and I have discussed here for years on this show, and it has to and it's based around Governor Jones and Airdrie Studd. If you go with them with their young horses, you're going to get rewarded at the sales. And they themselves are the architects behind this. They picked very good-looking stallions. Upstart is one of them. Two, they have a tremendous broodmare band that is selected more on physique than it is on pedigree. They produce very, very good-looking yearlings, and they put them in the sales, and bingo, it happens before Upstart this year. You know, we saw this with Summer Front. We saw this with Cairo Prince. Upstart, a $10,000 stud fee. He's averaging, what, $123,000? So close to 12 times stud fee.
To me, that, you know, that is always, you know, looking at that kind of in a multiple, and also the sell through. You know, there's been a, he's had a handful of RNAs. Well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's had 4 RNAs out of, I think, 22. He's had 1 out and 4 RNAs and 18 that have sold. And they just, you can tell, you got some end users buying, you've got pinhookers buying, and obviously, I mean, this is a flatter, son of flatter Upstart, and I just, as I sum through, it's so funny, you just, all you have to do, you go through the result pages, and, you know, after a few days, certain names, and you know, they just sort of, they start to kind of jump off the page at you. And he was number one. And then when you add up the, you know, you add up the stud fee and the average, you know, there's your equation. The other horse that is doing smashingly, it's interesting because he did not have a chance to perform as a 3-year-old, and that's not this time.
Yeah, another good pick on your part. Another extremely good-looking stallion by Giants Causeway. He happens to be the half-brother to Liam's Map, Alba Family Trust, who has Dennis's Moment. Same profile that this horse, Not This Time, had before he got hurt in the Breeders' Cup. So very promising horse. Standing for 15,000, averaging a little more than Upstart at 129,000, but it's a great return on investment for those people. And just an outstanding horse as well physically, with that pedigree behind him. So it's interesting that California TaylorMade Farm stands both Not This Time for 15,000 and California Chrome for 40,000, and California similar results with the big discrepancy in stud fee. California Chrome averaging 124, Not This Time 129. On sheer speculation, had you been a breeder, you would have done better, obviously, on your ROI. Selling with Not This Time, which is always interesting when you see a horse like that catch your eye, Steve. So that's another real good one. There have been a few others too. Air Force Blue, 25,000 at Ashford, on a Warfront. He and Run Happy, the big story. 25,000 at Claiborne. Run Happy's are averaging 263,000. Air Force Blue, a European race son, European 2-year-old champion by Warfront, still getting some nice returns with $163,000 average. These, you know, it's very similar to the stock market and investing, Steve, when you're looking at these first crop horses. And you decide, you know, who you're going to breed to. It shows you why these first crop horses really are so popular, because their returns are quite healthy versus stud fee, and that's because people buy first crop horses. And there's been a tussle kind of at the top end of this between Nyquist at a $40,000, Frosted at $50,000, the surprising Run Happy at $20,000. All kind of sharing that title day to day as we go, you know, with averages in the 200,000s, 240 and up for Frosted, 260 for Run Happy, 267 for Nyquist. Either one on any given day of the sale, depending on a price, whether it's a high price or a low price, is going to affect their averages. But they're all, those three are really fighting it out. But below them, you know, there's good money to be made. As I mentioned, Air Force Blue, as you pointed out, Not This Time. Tamarcuz at Shadwell, not a lot of horses, only seven through the ring, all seven sold. 12.5 studs, averaging 129,000. The surprising Outwork and Windstar, 15,000, averaging 131,000.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot in here. And even Flintshire, who's a, you know, a distance turf horse, not the most popular type, and he's at Hillendale, John Sikora, 20,000. He's averaging close to 100,000, 96,000. Should also mention the other Giants Causeway young horse, Brody's Cause. Also an Alba family horse, Not This Time, but he's at Spendthrift for 12.5, 92,000, return on him. So these are all really good, returns. Spitester, 10,000 stud fee at Windstar, 116,000.
I'm going to bring up you mentioned Flintshire, but I want to note Cantheros's really remarkable success, because it's one thing, Sid, when you look at these stallions and you see them, you know, sons of Warfront, sons of Giants Causeway, sons of AP Indy, etc. He's a son of Lionheart. I mean, for him to have done what he did and make his way from Florida to Kentucky, and, you know, basically, you know, some of his best progeny should be ahead of him, because he's, you know, going to be getting better and better mares, you know, as his, you know, the second half of his stud career. But he's had a very good sale, and there's quite a few more coming. And then I want to mention a horse that nobody talks about, and I don't think you and I have discussed him more than once or twice, and yet he's got a bunch of stake winners. He sells well. So far in the sale, to going into today, he's only had one RNA. He's 18 for 19. I'm going to mention Darby Dan's Dialed In, who...
That's a good horse that we never seem to mention. Yeah.
And all he does is get runners and winners and stake winners, and nobody heralds him at all, and he's having a tremendous sale again.
Yeah, I mean, they're finally catching on to him. You know, he was hit really from the very beginning. Came out of nowhere. He was a horse that Doug Coffin and the Darby Dan people kind of put together to stand there, offered with the Share the Upside program that B. Wayne Hughes' Spendthrift pioneered. Biggest success story of that, of course, is Into Mischief. But this horse got a lot of mares, and it did well, extremely well. I believe he only started off for 7,500. Now he's standing at a level befitting his success, and I think it's all starting to catch up. I noticed while going through the catalog that the quality of mares that he's been bred to has improved drastically as well. So your point about Cantheros and the best is still ahead of him, I'd make that bet about Dialed In too, because the mares that I saw in this in the book, and I go through every single hip, and I just kind of note it mentally with stallions, but the Dialed Ins were getting some very, very good mares, finally, really good mares. Can the Cantharuses, they still didn't have good mares in this sale that he will have in upcoming sales. But the Dialed Ins have reached that point, and so I think you're going to get a big move up from him, and I think the prices are reflecting those better pedigrees.
Yeah, those were the ones that I, you know, as I looked through, you know, particularly the, you know, we mentioned a lot that mostly had horses that started to show up a little bit in book two, but really mostly in book three, and then yesterday, the first session of book four. And the bargain shopping, you can't even call it bargain shopping, Sid, because, you know, we're still getting, you know, $350,000 to $500,000 purchases. And, you know, while the session leaders are, you know, will continue to trickle down, there's going to be individuals that pop here the next couple of days. And I want to hit, and of course, don't forget, we've got all the pinhookers now swinging into action. And I actually did a couple of searches. I was very curious to see, and you know, I looked at Eisenman and Randy Bradshaw. I also looked at some of the big agents like Ben Glass and Ben McElroy, because it's always interesting. I bring it up with you every year about who they're buying and what first crop stallions have caught their eye. And of course, Ben Glass, there's no outfit like Gary West and his interests. Every single hip occult again, they just are only interested in classic horses. By my count, I've got four Candy Rides, three Street Senses, two Quality Roads, two Union Rags, I think two American Pharaohs, one American Pharaoh, actually, an Empire Maker, a Ghost Zapper, two Ghost Zappers, and a Bernardini, and an Uncle Mo. All Colts.
Well, that's an operation I can actually give you a little insight into, since we do advise them. Before the sale, Gary and Ben want from us not only who we like in the sale, but a detail on classic ability, distance ability, and they're only looking at colts. They rarely buy a young sire, except with American Pharaoh, they've made an exception because he's an exceptional horse. So they're all colts. They've all got to tick the box of being able to stay the trip. That's what they're looking for. And, you know, Gary, the West are big buyers every year at Keeneland. That's where they buy. And for guys like the West, there are these private rooms at Keeneland. If you've ever been there, you'll see it. They're like alphabetically lettered, A through I, and then I through whatever. And usually room H is the West room. And I was summoned there last week. Walked in. Gary was behind the desk. And then there's Ben Glass. There's, of course, Ben only buys for Gary. There's Doc Brunk. that's their vet that they bring in from Omaha. Great guy, full beard, tats. You wouldn't think he's a vet when he's in, you know. He's in there. Benny is in there. Jeff Kirk. Jeff breaks all your yearlings. He's there. Sometimes Des will step in. He boards the horses, and so they systematically then go through every colt that they're interested in, and basically that's how it works. And that's how they got, for example, Game Winner, Candy Ride, that they purchased for $110,000. We liked him on pedigree, but they have to like Doc Frunk has to like him on the veterinary issues. Ben Glass has got to like him and his team on the physical. And then Gary West sits there and goes through every single horse too. And you know, if something comes up but Gary doesn't like it, he says pass, next horse. And so that's how it works. And Gary's actually sitting in there with them. And it's always amazed me because this billionaire walks out. He's walking around. He's in a, you know, dressed in a T-shirt and jeans. You'd never notice him. And I'm always amazed that he just walks through the Keeneland, walks through the barns, and nobody has any idea that this guy, high net worth guy from San Diego, actually in the trenches doing the kind of stuff. But he's just got an incredible passion for the game. And unfortunately, Steve, with what happened with Maximum Security, he's been misunderstood. He's come across not as the Gary West I know him, but he's come across in social media where he's been torched. In various press stories, some kind of petulant billionaire that didn't get his way. That's really not the case about it. If you know the guy well, as I do, it's far from the case, but I feel like I've never been able to really address that as a conflict of interest on social media, but I thought I'd throw that out right now since I just did meet with him.
Now, it is amazing to me. I have seen him, in a lot of settings, and always very, very casual in the gray, a lot of times in that gray zip up sweatshirt. And, it's just not what you expect. In fact, we were at Santa Anita.
Yeah.
And it was the day, I think it was the day after, what was it? The day after the Santa Anita Derby, maybe on the Sunday. It was a rainy, this is about 2 years ago, I think. And maybe it was American Freedom broke his maiden. And I walked with Baffert, down and I barely, all of a sudden I looked to Baffert's left and there was Gary, and he's wearing a sweatshirt, and he went down for the photograph. But the contest too,
he's a big contest player
He's kind of low key and I sort of to echo what you just said too. One of the side effects or side residual effects of everything that's gone on this year is to give people an impression that really isn't fair of him. This has been torturous, and I can't imagine. I mean, because for years we've talked about their buying approach and their operation, and Ben Glass himself has been so generous to come on and talk about what they're trying to do and the classic interests, and they've had success obviously, and they've put I would say second only to Zayat in recent memory in terms of producing sires, which is always a side goal for operations like this, for owner owner mission statement purposes. And people, I think, who really didn't know Gary West have got this impression that really isn't accurate.
It's completely inaccurate. And, to add to that, Steve, Gary and Mary West, and Gary, Mary loves racing. Gary's absolutely insane about it. And he has a bucket list of four races, two of which he's won, which is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Travers. The other two races are the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. He had a shot going into it last year with West Coast. Of course, that didn't happen. He did win the Juvenile again with Game Winner. He'd already won it with New Year's Day. And then, of course, the Derby, which he was in the winner's circle. He had everything. And then, boom, you have to leave. You're not the winner. So it was viscerally for him, actually being in the winner's circle and then being taken out. That was a big shock that people don't understand, too. You've done this whole thing to get to where you want to achieve your goal. You feel like you've gotten there, and then physically taken out. I think when you factor that kind of thing into it, and he's a competitive guy. He's also a guy, just real quickly, he and his wife, they sold their businesses, for a couple of billion dollars. And all they've been doing, aside from racing the last few years, is the Gary Mary West Foundation is dedicated. They've already given away like $200 million. They're philanthropists. Their entire existence right now is to give money away for the care of the elderly. And that's really what they do. So people understand that these are some major philanthropists. And, I was in the room with Gary. At one point, I don't know if this is giving away too much information, but Ben comes running over to me and he goes, "Oh, Gary needs to talk to you." And I said to Gary, I said to Ben, I said, "Where?" He goes, "In the room." He goes, "Well, when are we all going in? Just let me know. I'm just finishing up this smoke." And he said, "Just finish it up, but we're not all going in, just you are." So I walked in. It was just me and Gary in the room. And, Gary, we had some, obviously he and I had some talks about some stuff. But, one of the things that did come up in that conversation was he had some interesting things to tell me, which is actually going to be the basis of my next column, not the one coming up today for TVN, or this week, but in 2 weeks. He's got something he wants to talk about in terms of the Derby, but not in a way you'd expect. And if he doesn't tell anybody else, this article I'm going to write, it will probably be the first time it's been said. So I'm not going to give away the punchline, but he does have something to say about it. But he's a very, very straightforward guy. And if you have a second, I'll give you one other anecdote. Another time I was in the room with them, Ben Gary's questioning about the sale, of New Year's Day to Brazil. And Ben and I had been in that room when the agent came in to make that deal. And we liked Maximum Security. We obviously assisted in the mating of the horse, but we never expected that he was going to be a Derby winner, obviously. But, Gary said straight up, he said, "Look, Sid, next time you ever have a feeling about a horse, don't be afraid to say, hey, don't sell it or keep it or whatever." And, he's just that kind of guy. He's not a yes man. In other words, he doesn't want to hear from guys what they think you want to hear. And a lot of billionaires are that way, and they're usually followed by a coterie of advisors and people that say yes, yes, yes. But Gary's one of those guys that said, look, tell me what you really think. You know, that's what I'm interested in. And so having known the guy, I know how well, how misunderstood he is and how unfairly, in my opinion, he's been portrayed in the media.
I'm glad we didn't. This was sort of a
blind. Yeah, this is totally an organic thing.
Yeah, exactly. I did not.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm delighted to. In fact, I'll direct people if they want to look. Because I looked it up just now at listening to you, westhealth.org. If you want to learn more about what Gary and Mary West are doing in the pursuit of giving elderly aging,
they're giving away their
people.
Entire. They don't have kids. So essentially, they've set up a foundation. They're both 72, youthful 72s. They're interested in taking care of older people, especially homeless people, people that don't have access, that have fallen through the cracks of government programs. And essentially, what they're going to do is they're giving away their entire fortune. That will be dispersed. They have no children, so that's what's in their will, and that's how it's all set up.
Interesting. I knew that they had the foundation, but did not know about the tie to specifically to the aging and
quality
of life
and
that stuff.
Yeah. When you talk to somebody on a personal level, I hear the passion that he talks about of taking care of people, of giving back to society. All values you and I both absolutely respect, obviously. And so you speak to guys on non-horse related stuff about their passions, and you hear about this kind of stuff. And so I can understand, in my case, I know more about Gary West than the average guy. And having dealt with him, I know how extraordinarily generous he is. And what a caring person he is in terms of, just his humanity. So when I see this jarring stuff about it, I know it's not the same guy that I know.
I'm glad we went in this direction. I want to mention a couple other notes before we wrap up, and that includes, I mentioned Jeff Bloom and watching. We spoke to Jeff at length a couple of weeks ago, heading toward the sale, and I mentioned Bizou and the announcement from last week, but I was curious what he had done so far, and he's been active virtually from day one of the sale, and he's bought hips 89, 100, 200, 832, 1500, a 1600, 3 1600s, 4 1600s, a 2000, a 2400, and a 2500. So pretty much, he's shopping daily. But Sid, it's notable how disciplined Bloom is. He has not bought a horse for more than $155,000. He is stuck to that budget that has been so successful for him, and he's bought the cheapest thing he's bought is a Tisnow filly for $40,000. He's got a $50,000 Union Rags, a $65,000 Spitestown, a $95,000 Mineshaft colt. And then 7 hips from 100,000 to 155. And so despite, knowing that there's a payday coming at the end of the Bizou for him and his partners, he is maintaining the discipline that has yielded, horses like Midnight Bizou and Henley's Joy and Snapper Sinclair and on and on. And, this is sort of a countercultural approach to, the different layers. I mean, Rick Porter has got his, he's got his range. McGreevy's got his range, and for Jeff Bloom, he keeps picking out what must be horses that might have a blemish or two, because obviously those are nice pedigrees, and that's how he's been able to craft what is as successful an operation right now as anybody's got.
A very great point that you just demonstrated, especially comparing different operations. Jeff Bloom is your singles hitter in the sense that he's looking for he's very disciplined. To use a baseball analogy, he's very different, very disciplined. He's looking to put the ball in play. Okay, he's looking to get on base. He's looking to put that ball in play. Take a guy like Gary West, for example, in the Ben Grass operation. They're like Dave Kingman. They're swinging for the fences. They want that home run. And so they may have the home runs, but they may not have the batting average. Okay? Different approaches for different people. And that's a terrific example of a guy that's staying disciplined, that's will not deviate from that approach, will try to put that ball in play, and won't chase pitches outside the strike zone.
It has paid off, and you know the fact that you can buy. I mean, just looking at this roster: A Kitten's Joy, Street Sense, Spitestown, Mineshaft, Union Rags, Empire Maker, American Pharaoh, Into Mischief, Twirling Candy, Awesome Again, Tis Now, and a Lemon Drop Kid. Notable that so far he has not bought two of any same stallion. That's interesting. And he's bought, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fillies and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 colts, and cumulatively he's barely spent $1 million, $1.4 million, give or take, for, you know, for 12 hips with some of the most fashionable stallions available. And I mentioned when I say blemish, you know, these might be some, you know, some horses that some people, you know, don't like necessarily, that maybe they're a little undersized right now. And Jeff is counting on his ability to project what a yearling, that where it is on the growth cycle, that enables him, you know, to buy an American Pharaoh for $140,000 and to buy a Union Rags for $50,000. I mean, this is what is so exciting and fascinating about, you know, particularly the yearling market, as opposed to the two-year-old in training sale, where you really kind of know what you've got for the immediate future. You don't know what you've got in these yearlings.
That's got to
be able to, the gift that buyers have, or that buyers need, is to look at a horse in September of their yearling year and be able to see what that horse is going to look like 12 months from now, 18 months from now, 2 years from now.
That's a great, great analogy. Really, I mean, that's the skill of these yearling buyers, because it's all about projection, and it's not the product that you're looking at. It's just, again, like baseball. You know, you're scouting a player, you're scouting a high school guy or a college guy or whatever, and basically you're looking at the projection. As you get to the college level, which is like a 2-year-old sale, the projection is closer to reality. But when you're talking about a teenager in high school, that's why you give sometimes a lot of money for certain high school prospects, is because of that projection. It's not because of what that guy is doing in front of you. And with a guy like Bloom, he's making a career out of getting guys that may have been overlooked in college. They're not going to be a high ground draft pick, but those guys, and he's shown this with a track record, those guys are solid guys. They're able to produce. And for partnerships like that, that's what you want. You want to keep that churning. You want that high percentage of stakes horses that you can get to the track with. And really a great point on your part to show basically the skill that's involved in being able to project and to take horses that others may have overlooked. That's really the key. Because some of these horses, Midnight Bazoo is the perfect example. You know, she was cheap. Bloom found the key. In his eye, he found what other buyers had overlooked. And of course, that's when you have an eye like that, you're able to hone it every year, and you know what issues you can live with, you know what issues you can't, which applies to everybody, but especially when you're buying at a more inexpensive level and having that type of success, it really speaks very highly of your skills.
Well, Sid, we covered a tremendous amount of ground here. It's one of those conversations that just kind of rolls along. I can't thank you enough. We've got a lot to look forward to next week to make the final recap of the sale, and you know, clearly the health of the yearling market as a barometer for the game. The people that are at Keeneland right now, they are marching forward. So things have been very good, and we'll watch for some of those bargain hunters. If you heard Dale Romans on Monday, Dale said he loves this part of the sale, book five and six. He says, I'm just standing there. If I see a horse that going for too little money, I'm just going to buy it. And, you know, that's the... You know, the tail end. You got to have some stick-to-itiveness. So we'll see how the last couple of days go. And of course, we'll be recapping that Pennsylvania Derby and Cotillion, the last big 3-year-old exclusive opportunities of the year on the main track.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to coming back next Wednesday, and we'll talk more then. Never know what comes up when I speak to you, and it's always a pleasure.
This is a key time of the year as you get ready for your matings and to work with Sid at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. And another reminder, those of you that are going to be that are standing stallions, especially regional stallions that need a boost and need support, you want to, you know, make sure that your stallion is getting attention, you absolutely need to be in the Enix system and get your stallion enrolled and call Sid.
Yeah, thank you for
about
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely do that.
Now's the time because people are looking at the sales numbers and they're making decisions, but you got to have your stallion in the system to get a score for your cross. Sid Fernando, everybody. Thanks a lot. Brought to you by Hill and Dale, and the sale going quite nicely for John Sequeira and the team. We'll take a break. Top of the hour, we got Seth Merrow to roll in. We're going to talk to Bill Gallo, who is arriving at Belmont to get ready for today's Entenmann and tomorrow's Grade 1 Lonesome Glory. Back after this, Hour 3.